Professor Sigmund Kabisch from the Leipzig University is with us, and she will introduce her work to you and her center a little bit in a couple of minutes. But I, of course, have the honor to do the regular introduction. She is a professor at the Helmholtz Center for Environmental Research in Leipzig. She has started her academic career at the Martin Luther University in Halle-Wittenberg with a diploma in economics and sociology, and then moved to Leipzig and in various positions as a researcher, as a postdoc, as a faculty member, as a deputy head, and a head of various departments. I don't want to go through the entire list. I want to talk about her current work, where she is the speaker, which means that the PI, we would say in our language, in Canadian language, of two major research themes. One was, or still is in the concluding phase probably, was on sustainable urban development and quality of life. And the other one, which is underway as we speak, is on impacts of urban dynamics on land use options. She has extensive experience with large-scale housing estates. She has studied one particular housing estate in Leipzig over a period of 30 years. So she has ample data on one particular place and how it has transformed over the last 30 years, which is in itself very, very unique. And we're very pleased that we can work and collaborate with her on our global suburbanism research project, where we take some of you, some of the students that are here in the room, to a workshop in Leipzig this summer, where we also will meet up with Polish students and faculty members, and also will benefit from a conference / workshop on global on governance that is part of the MCRI larger research project that is headed by Professor Roger Kyle. So without further ado, please, Sigmund Kabisch.
Thank you very much. Dear Ute, dear Roger, thank you very much for this nice invitation and the possibility to be here and to give a lecture to you about my research subject. And you have read this announcement of the presentation, which disappeared here, unfortunately. You have to imagine that here you can read Shrinking Cities, New Thinking about Urban Development. So, and because of technical reasons, I don't know why it disappeared, but nevertheless, these pictures, these photos shall give you a first impression. What does it mean, shrinking cities in terms of urban development? And what are the causes of this shrinking phenomenon? You see, we have a lot of big buildings, blocks, which are in demolition at the moment. A quite different situation, which I could observe here in Toronto. You have construction, much construction. But we have the problem that we have too much housing stock and too few households who ask for apartments. That's a funny situation, but it's not funny, it's a challenging situation. And to deal with them, there are state programs and there are new thinking. That's why I have chosen the headline of my talk, New Thinking about Urban Development. But at first, let me give some impression about my institute, that you get some more information about this. As Ute mentioned, I'm teaching at the university, but my first job is at the Helmholtz Center for Environmental Research. The Helmholtz Center for Environmental Research is a big institute which is not a university. That's important to mention. We have in Germany a different structure of scientific institutions. And besides the universities, we have, for example, the Helmholtz Association, we have the Fraunhofer Association, Leibniz Association, and so on. So, and this Helmholtz Center for Environmental Research is dedicated only, or mostly, to environmental issues. And you see, we have 950 scientists, and what is much more important for us here, we have PhDs too. That means we are training youngsters, and we have close relations to universities, of course. So she mentioned that I'm a professor at the University of Leipzig, but my first job is to doing research at this research center. And we are financed by the Federal Ministry of Education and Research by 90%, which is important, and it's a difference to the university which get only 50% from the federal state. So we are more or less in a little bit better position. So, and it is further important, our structure. Environmental research is often understood as natural science research. But in this center, we have 8 scientific divisions, and within this, we have the division of social science. And this division is divided in 4 departments, and I'm the head of the Department of Urban and Environmental Sociology. Ooh. So, and this is the department where I'm the head from. These are my colleagues, and you see we are 22 scientists, and we have 3 PhD students. And the important thing is that we are interdisciplinary oriented within the urban and environmental sociology itself. Not only sociologists are working there, we have geographers, cartographers, cultural scientists, political scientists. So all these disciplines who are thinking in a social science way, but they are open and they are willing to cooperate with natural scientists too. That's important, and we think this is new or challenging, of course, to find the common language with natural scientists. But it is challenging, and it is innovative, and of course it's absolutely interesting. That's for sure, but it needs a lot of time. So now some words to our research topics. We are dealing with land use conflicts, urban development concerning land use conflicts. And in brackets you see, this is the soft money financiation, which we get additionally. So we have a lot of soft money, in German Drittmittelprojekte, financed by additional institutions and mainly by the EU, European Union. So that means that we are we have a lot of international contacts and international projects. So on urban development, these land use conflicts, these demographic issues, which we hear today a lot, or some more of these, urban vulnerability. This is a quite new and challenging subject concerning environmental risk and climate change issues. This photo is an example for this. And we are dealing further with sustainable assessment for land use options in contaminated sites, old brownfields and so on within the cities to come to a new use. So this is an overview on our research topics. And now I integrated this slide in my presentation because last year we carried out a very big international conference. IAP stands for International Association for People Environmental Studies. And here in this association, urban researchers and environmental researchers coming together and discuss very important issues. And a colleague from your university, from York University, Harris S. Ali, gave a keynote lecture, which was very important here in this discussion. And this conference took place exactly in this conference center where our guests from the York University will work in June. So now coming to our subject of today. Research question is there another urban development than growth? is this a realistic path or is it stupid? I try to convince you that it is not stupid. Here you see on these slides some expressions of the discussion in the media, which we had during the last years. You see Germany on the course of shrinkage, land without children, without future, welcome to pensionopolis. So the loss and the aging of population is a question, or is a phenomenon, and how to deal with this. I will discuss this issue with these 5 points. At first, I will describe a little bit the context of urban shrinkage. What is it? How to understand it? And is it a single phenomenon or is it an international phenomenon? I will describe the causes and consequences of this process. I will introduce to you the urban restructuring program, which is a political program to deal with this. Then I will discuss with you the social dimension of demolition of housing stock. And finally, I will conclude with some chances, describing some chances and challenges in this process. You see on this map, hopefully you can see it, the two world maps. The point is that we have here indicated urban growth cities with these red points, and on the other with these black points there, the shrinking cities. Cities bigger than 100,000 inhabitants. And the point is that we can find this phenomenon all over the world. Of course, concentrated in some places, but it is not only a single German phenomenon. So you see, especially, of course, here in Europe, it is highly concentrated, and you see the concentration in Eastern Europe. And we can find this in Japan, for example, too, and of course in the Rust Belt cities in the States, we have this phenomenon. So urban shrinkage is a significant phenomenon in a significant number of cities. And we found out that since 1950, approximately 350 large cities are affected by this process worldwide. Coming more on a European focus, you see that it is necessary to differentiate in between the different cities. On the base of an European database, Eurostat, which is a base created by the European Commission, which includes cities more than 200,000 inhabitants, and who distributed their data in this database. On this base, there was an evaluation on shrinking, on growing, and on cities who regained again population. And if you see on this map that we have a very colorful picture, but we see concentrations of this shrinking process. These declining or shrinking cities here again are indicated in Eastern European countries. And the more prospective cities are here in Western Germany, in Netherlands, France, Spain. So the point is that we have to look closer into the development of the different countries. So it is not a country who involves only shrinking cities or only declining growing cities. We have regional differences. To give you some examples about this, here I had this, I included in this table some figures of different cities. Liverpool, well known from Great Britain. Halle and Leipzig from Germany, Genoa from Italy, Bytom from Poland, Makhlivka from Ukraine, Sosnowiec from Poland, Donetsk from Ukraine, Timișoara from Romania, and Ostrava from Czech Republic. You see again that is Eastern European. And the interesting column is this. You see the total of change, the shrinking amount. And of course here Liverpool and Halle, Liverpool and Leipzig have been observed in a very long period, over 50 years. They have over 50 years shrinking tendencies because of decline of economic development. And these other cities have been observed in a smaller period. But nevertheless, the point is that there are many, many cities basing mostly on heavy industry, experienced during the last decades shrinking processes. So, and how to deal with this issue? This is complicated and context sensitive. In every region or in every context, it is necessary to find out own strategies, but nevertheless, it is worthwhile to deal with this in research projects. And we are dealing with this issue in this EU project Shrink Smart, which I showed you on another slide. This is an ongoing project at the moment. So, what does it mean, shrinkage, or how can we measure shrinkage? And we think that it is necessary to have a certain scope of population loss in a certain period. That is a base for measuring. It is necessary to realize that there are quantitative and qualitative of dimensions of shrinkage. The quantitative is the calculation, what can we calculate, like the amount of population or the number of households, and it is necessary to ask what kind of qualitative consequences there are. For example, the amount of vacancies, dealing with vacancy in an urban context, and not only on some points or some places, in a huge amount, vacancy in a huge amount. Further, we have to deal with dilapidation or derelict land. And of course, the socio-spatial differentiation processes, including segregation tendencies, are involved in this process. It is necessary to have a clear definition or a distinction from other terms. I'm sure you know that in the Western debate we have such concepts like decline, like decay, like blight, and so on. So, but what is shrinkage? What is shrinking in this frame? We have other terms in these countries where we are discover these processes. For example, in Poland and Czech Republic, depopulation. Depopulation is their term which these colleagues use for describing this process. And it is necessary to think about the criteria of distinction of the context. Population decline, this is our focus, we are looking on the population decline mostly. And it is a question of the connotation. That means, is urban shrinkage negative? Only negative, or is it a development path? And we have to look for the positive and the negative circumstances and features of this. And further the context of urban shrinkage we have to consider. That means, is it, it is a global and international process, or is it more Europeanization in this discussion? The next point is looking on these Eastern European processes. Of course, there is the post-socialist transition in this frame important to mention. So that means the development after the change from the communist era to the democratic era. We have the demographic change as a very big international challenge. Here, demographic issues we describe as a development of births or deaths or aging processes, migration issues, and so on. And of course, the economic and financial crisis have to be considered in this process. Coming now from the global over the European to the national context, I show you this map to describe what's going on here in Germany. So this is Germany, of course. So, and you see these blue colors more or less covers the East German area, the former East Germany. But there was the border, former border. And you see that this blue color comes into other regions in West Germany too. So there's no more a border. And you see the development of population and jobs, the blue color indicates a very strong decline. And we have, on the other hand, red areas which experience a strong growth. So there is another evidence for the differentiation within a country, within different regions in Germany. To get an impression about the situation, the population situation in Germany, I brought this picture with me. And this is, in comparison to Canada, completely different. You see, here, 2010, we have more or less 84 million inhabitants. And the youngest prognosis of the population indicate that we have shrinking population number of the entire country. So the question is how to deal with this situation, and why we don't stabilize or increase our population number. And maybe we can discuss this issue further afterwards. But this is the precondition, and the politicians and scientists and so on have to deal with exactly this prognosis. To get a conceptual frame on this shrinking issue from the standpoint of a scientist, we collected several developments and draw this picture, which shall indicate that the population decline is the most important feature of this process, but it has a lot of relations, interlinkages, links to other features, and it is caused by economic development, demographic change, settlement systems development, environmental issues, political events. All these different aspects influence population development and, in that sense, the population decline. And this has consequences for urban development. And here are some consequences which we collected. To deal with this concept as a scientist, it is necessary to realize in which different forms and frames this process occurs. And I'm a sociologist and a geographer too, so I'm dealing with land land use patterns and with settlement structures. So we realize that urban shrinkage, maybe it's not the right term, urban shrinkage. It is shrinkage of settlements. So we have urban and rural settlements shrinkage. So the entire settlement structure is more or less affected. We know or we see that at least one essential feature with a shrinking tendency is important for describing this process. But we have an overlapping of processes and we have interdependencies between the features and the impacts and processes. And if we look around, look back to this, picture, we have to realize that there is not only one tendency. In reality, we have the overlapping of a lot of tendencies. And to deal with this complex issue, that's the challenge. We know that this is a long-lasting development. Here the temporal or the time dimension comes into play. Long-lasting, that means not in a very short period, vice versa development. We have a short-lasting development over the last 20 years to come to this shrinking issue, but to come to another vice versa development, it needs much more time than it will never happen. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we have spatial impacts and consequences which are very significant. So that means we have temporal and spatial consequences. And to deal with these conceptual approaches, we need context specificity, so that means always to realize what's going on the specific place. We can describe the overall features, but we have to consider the specificities on each place. We are looking on government and governance issues, how to steer the opportunities which are available or which are missing. It is necessary to realize the actors and networks involved and how it is possible to participate in this process. Which kind of stakeholders are involved and how can we involve them? We have to look on appropriate methods and tools. And it is absolutely necessary to work inter- and transdisciplinarity. So I come back to my initial words on the Helmholtz Center. Here we have the chance to work together with landscape architects, for example, or with people who are dealing with urban modeling issues. So to come to a more comprehensive picture or approach to deal with these processes. And to work transdisciplinary means to involve the stakeholders in the research process. But finally, the overall issue is in our view that we have to accept shrinkage as a new but a normal urban pathway. So now nevertheless, how to deal with this and how is the political situation in Germany to come to such answers that we can ensure the urban quality of life in shrinking areas and shrinking settlements. So, and here I will introduce you this program which called Urban Restructuring Program East. It's the real name. And here I would refer to the historical situation. 20 years before, there was the urban reunification, so these both parts came together. And at that point, it was necessary to realize that there was a huge housing shortage, And in between 1990 until 2010, about 918,000 new flats have been built or have been renewed. And it is necessary to mention that in 1990, there were 400,000 uninhabitable flats because of their bad state of repair. Maybe we can discuss this further. Depends on the political situation in East Germany. But in 2000, the picture changed completely. And an expert commission reported that in East Germany there are 1 million empty flats. From one situation to the other extreme was a change. What to do on the housing market? So the housing market runs the risk to crash totally. So that's why this program was evolved by the state, and it was framed as a problem of housing market and urban development, and the target was cleaning of the housing market and urban restructuring. And what cleaning means, I will show you now. With the program Urban Restructuring East, within this program, 300 cities were involved. But the point was that 350,000 flats should be demolished. So, and besides this demolition strategy, an upgrading strategy within residential areas should be carried out. So, in reality, the concentration was on demolition to clean the housing market. So, and the demolition issue was directed in two dimensions. On the one hand, punctual demolition, we call this perforation, so in several points. And the other strategy was large scale demolition. Entire urban areas have been demolished. So, and the precondition of this, or for taking part in this program, was an integrated urban development concept, a plan, a program of both municipality and housing enterprises. These both sides, institutions, had to come together and had to work out a convincing integrated urban development concept. And the base, or the most important base, most important feature of this program, of these concepts, were the population developments. So that's why the population issue is so important in this entire thinking about the shrinking process. And in 2004, there were some first idea looking for new chances of shrinking and of demolition and of reconstructing entire urban spaces. And one colleague of mine called this Luxus der Leere, luxury of emptiness. What can we do with these more empty spaces? Lower density, maybe more green, more open spaces, better microclimate, and so on. So you see, there is a change in the thinking in the minds of the people, not only from the initial thinking of a catastrophe on the one hand, and on the other hand, then coming to thinking about new chances for redeveloping urban spaces. So here on this map, you see that 600 residential areas were involved, and 40% of the large housing estates were involved in this program. And you see big cities, but also smaller settlements are involved in this. So that's why I mentioned in the beginning, not only big cities were affected by these shrinking issues, but also smaller settlements. And here the city of Leipzig is located, and here Berlin is located, so the city of Dresden, if you get an impression where we are. And you see especially here, in this surrounding, many, many settlements are involved in this program. So that means this is an area which was very well or very high industrial developed in the former time. And here we have the same issue on former heavy industry, and now the problem of people go out, unemployment rate is quite high, people leave this area, and the shrinking issue is on the agenda, and especially the loss of population. Here I give you some ideas. What does it mean, demolition of urban spaces? And the point is, that's why we are talking about large housing estates, and in this afternoon we will talk much more detailed about this issue, that the most amount, or the biggest amount of demolition was concentrated in exactly these large housing estates. The reasons are the homeowner situation, the Eigentümerstruktur.
Property structure,
thanks. So big enterprises own this. These mostly municipal owned blocks could demolished more or less easy in comparison to private owned blocks. So that's why the demolition was concentrated in these big housing estates. And if you look closer on these both pictures, you see this is the pink building which you see here. And then at the end, there are much more green spaces, much lower density of housing districts. And the next point is in terms of upgrading, that there are efforts to change the picture of these existing buildings. They became better balconies, and they had terraces on the roof, so it became more or less attractive to live there and to stay there. So this is an example for the change of the situation and of the image of the picture of these large housing estates. And I will refer to this scale, which shows the population development between 1979 and 2008. And here you can see that the amount of population had a growing tendency. According to the construction of this estate. It started in 1976. And the biggest amount of population we had in 1989, before the reunification. And then 85,000 people lived there in this estate. It was a big estate, a big, like a city its own now. And after this point of the reunification, many people went out, look for another place for living, better living, but the most important point, looking for a place of work, because the unemployment rate developed in exploded, yes. So people were forced to change the place, no? Mostly to Western Germany. So, and you see at the moment we have more or less 45,000 inhabitants in this area, much lower, of course, many people say, those people who will not live or will not stay in such housing blocks, they are gone in the meantime. But our argument is 45,000 people. This is the amount of a middle-sized city in Germany. This is a huge amount, and we have to deal with this. And we will see in future that there are some advantages which we can find, especially here, and it is useful to deal with this situation. So here I will show you with this map the points, the red points, the red blocks, where the demolition was going on during the last year, and it is planned that 6,000 more flats will be demolished. So, and what's going on and what kind of consequences there are connected with, we will discuss in Leipzig, I'm sure. So now I will give you shortly some impressions of our research which we have done during the last year, and Ute mentioned that this is a very unique long-term study of the research since 1979, and it observed the development of these big housing estates. And by sociological investigations, people became surveyed, interviewed, how do they feel there, if they will stay there, if they are satisfied with their social equipment, infrastructure, etc. And this one indicator shows that there is an interesting development of the evaluation of this estate. You see, in 1997, 1981, the satisfaction was very high. Do you feel good in this estate? Was a question within a big questionnaire. And then, in the period of after the German reunification, it dropped down. Because people had much more a broader view on possibilities of living, of housing. But nevertheless, you see during the last 10 years, the last decade, there is an unexpectedly high satisfaction with these living conditions. For us, it was very, very surprising to get this in 2009. And the question is why? So, and we asked further how the people evaluate these reconstruction, these demolition experiences in their surroundings. No? And in 2004, the people were much more skeptical because they experienced that in their neighborhood. And in 2009, this process slowed down a little bit, and the people realized what was going on after demolition. So they more green, more open spaces, etc. And you see, they have a quite positive reflection on this issue. So there is no more dramatization. There is an acceptance of results, but the people will know what's going on. So in sense of acceptance, in sense of participation of the entire process. I will stop with these results of Leipzig-Grünau long-term study because we have the chance to discuss this afternoon and then in Leipzig. I will give you only some reflections of another issue because I mentioned we had two different strategies of demolition. We have these punctual demolition, which I showed you here in Leipzig-Grünau, and we have the demolition of entire urban spaces. And we call them life-limited neighborhoods. We created this term. We think this is a new type of residential area, and it is characterized by plans to be completely given up in the next years and without any future use as residential or commercial area. And this is new. Of course, demolition, that's it's normal everywhere, but not to define a future use as a commercial or residential area. That's new.
That's a German term. German term for life in the neighborhood.
Temporale, temporäre Orte. Ja. Oder Stadtquartiere auf Zeit. So, and here is an example for that. We did a PhD thesis in the city of Hoyerswerda, a former very strong industrial, heavy industrial city. So we have the same reason, no? And it was it has a growing process during the 50s and 60s, and large housing estates were built in this city. And you see a population in 1989, 67,000 people lived there. And in 2003, only 45,000, and the prognosis is only 25,000 in 2020. A dramatic loss of population. And the next point in this demographic issue is that besides this loss of population, there is an imbalance of the age structure. That's why I mentioned here this share of persons aged over 80, from 3% to 16%. That means there's a completely new need for special services, social infrastructure. So this is behind the entire process. And for describing this issue of life-limited neighborhoods, you see this example. So this is or was a housing estate, and it disappeared already partly, and until 2020 it will disappear totally. So now I describe you what does it mean to live in such a life limit neighborhood. What does it mean for everyday life? So, to live in a block, and you experience that in your neighborhood, stepwise, the blocks disappear. So this causes stress, strains, uncertainties. It forced mobility. There are many people who will stay there, but it is necessary to go. This is not voluntary to go from these places. Of course, the networks are getting lost, and long-term housing perspectives are no more existent, sure. Social and technical infrastructure diminish, and we find here significant social and psychological implications, because this entire process goes over years. So, and now I show you what does it mean that you get an impression about this, no? So this is in the city of Hoyerswerda in the year 2005, the beginning of this process of demolition. And you see 2 years later, an entire area disappeared, and the other blocks disappeared in the following years. The point is that the entire infrastructure here, the streets, and in the underground, the lines are still there. So it's not only the question of demolishing the blocks, but also the underground lines, infrastructure are affected. And this is an open question, how to cut these lines. So, and at the end of 2007, we had this picture. The people gave water to these planted trees. That means the wood came back. And the local newspaper titled, "The wood is coming back here in this area."
The forest
is coming back. Yeah. So that's what we mean with life limited neighborhoods. Yes, I described a lot about these issues in my research and my environment where I live and where I'm interested in. Summing up some changes and some challenges, I would highlight that shrinkage or shrinking is a very complex process, a very complex phenomenon which requires a mix of methods including urban planning, including social science from sociology to psychology. Of course, economic and legal issues are involved and environmental issues involved. So it is a very interesting challenge for scientists and for urban planners to deal with them with this, in a sense that in future we can further support acceptable living conditions in these areas which are affected on the shrinking issue, and to come to a point that we can ensure such living conditions that the shrinking process can come to a level or to an end, and that we can stabilize the conditions on a lower level, but on a lower quantitative level, but on an acceptable qualitative level for the remaining people. It's complex, it's international, and it needs acceptance and not a tabooization, I don't know if this is English, not to use it as a taboo. And at the moment we realize, if we are working together with stakeholders and with mayors, that many mayors don't deal with this development in their settlement, because they think shrinking is only negative, or a totally negative issue, or brings a negative issue to deal with this on the local or on the official agenda. But it is absolutely necessary that we are convinced about this, to deal with this in a proper manner, and to discuss it in an open-minded atmosphere, and to see the chances, but not forget the challenges. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sigrun. The floor is now open for questions or discussions or points that you want to clarify or engage her in a debate over growth and shrinkage. What can we learn from our experience? What any points?
When they create these new green spaces, so they remove a building and there's a decrease in density in this more green space, is there social programming that goes along the newfound spaces? People investing in, but it seems like they were regrowing some forests. Are there other things happening in those spaces, or are they underused?
Yes. This was an extreme, what I showed, connected to these life-limited neighborhoods. No? And these other, or in other places, of course, there are very interesting programs, especially for youth, to provide them space for doing their sporting activities. Half pipe, for example, you can find in Leipzig. Or playing other sports activities. No? This is one point. Another program includes gardening within this area. No? So that there are several ideas. Or, for example, there's a very interesting project on using these slabs from the buildings. They putting over and over as an ist ein Felsen.
Rock.
As a rock. Huh? And people can climb on this rock. That's interesting. You know, this is a form of this concrete, yeah? But it is so formed as a rock, and people can do their sporting activities within these estates. So it's a leisure time facility. So yes, there are.
Another question regarding the Let's see, the decision-making process in terms of demolition,
yeah.
I mean, are there any community groups involved in that? I mean, who's involved in the decision-making of, you know, what to demolish and what to redevelop and how to redevelop? For example, in Grünau.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And there's a lot of discussion and research on this, especially by my colleague Matthias Berndt. Maybe you know him. The point is that only the owner can decide if there will be a block demolished or not, not the municipality or the neighborhood groups or someone else. Only the owner can decide. That's for sure. No? But to find a good solution and to act according an a comprehensive development plan, it is necessary to communicate between all partners involved in this process. And the municipality of Leipzig did great efforts to bring these different owners and stakeholders together on one table. And it is a complicated process, very complicated process. And the point is that many of these housing enterprises got financial support for invest into the blocks, for improvement of these blocks, for example. Energy isolation issues, no? or other things. No? So no owner would demolish a block if he invested some years before in this block, no? on the basis of credits. That's why the municipal strategy is to bring all people together and discuss a common strategy which is convincing and which is for each who is affected acceptable. And I mentioned that in the first phase, especially the municipal housing enterprise demolished a lot of blocks. Most of these red blocks were owned by the municipality or the enterprise of the municipality. But now there is a break because of this situation which I described. Nevertheless, we observed that during the last years there was a discussion on an accepted development plan. And in Leipzig, they created a so-called Pact der Vernunft. I don't know in English.
It's created a Pact of Reason.
Yeah. A pact of Reason. So that that means that everybody is agreeing with the proposal. But after some years, this pact destroyed. It was not stable. Because the interests became controversial, more or less controversial. So that's why I cannot... totally convincing answer your question because it's so difficult in this situation. But mostly on that point there is a demolition where the owners, the housing enterprises had not invested before during the last years.
So just a quick question. So in Grünau, what is the ownership structure there?
Yeah, this is a mixed ownership structure at the moment. No? We have blocks which own which owned by the municipal enterprise. We have cooperatives and we have private ownerships and we have condominiums. But the amount of condominium is quite small. There was a hope at the beginning of the 90s, that many people will buy their apartment, but in reality, it was not the case. What is
Nachvollziehbar? It's plausible.
is plausible because of the insecurity of the entire life. You know, I said that many people are unemployed, became unemployed, they had to go to other places, so they would not take a credit for buying their apartment. And there were a lot of apartments. So you have a wonderful range of empty apartments, very good apartments in Leipzig. So I invite you to come and live there. So especially students coming from other places, from West Germany, where the rents are very high, are often so surprised about this situation that they find very cheap but good apartments.
Let's all move to Leipzig.
So when the government decides to demolish like the municipal owned blocks, like how involved are they in housing the people who are displaced in spaces?
How involved? What, the people?
Well,
yeah. Not the government decided. The municipality owned enterprise decided these blocks. So, and that means that there is a pre phase to prepare these blocks for demolition. So that means these are blocks in which the share of empty apartments are quite high, but in reality 50% or so. Now these are a tower block, 16 stories. The challenge is to convince the other 50% to go out, to force them. That's why I mentioned that there are psychological stress situation for people to be affected with this issue. So there is an intensive convincing process or discussion process, and the people get offers from these enterprises to move to other places, to move to a comparable apartments, comparable in sense of the size of the rent. It's mostly rented apartments. So there's another situation than here in Canada. So they get offers, and the enterprises are interested in keeping their clientele, their renters, because for paying the rent. So there are intensive strategies to keep them and to provide them with another apartment. But nevertheless, it's not free of problems.
Yeah.
Definitely. Ute,
your map of Germany showed some cities with population decline, job growth. I wonder if that's the case of Leipzig. And if you could comment on how a city might be growing economically but shrinking at the same time.
Yes. We call them this phenomenon jobless growth. Jobless growth. That means there is investments, there are investments going on. But these investments in a very big amount, they are so specialized that the manpower is very, very low, which they need for this. For example, in the chemical industry. So this is there are several places which are favorite places for investors coming from the chemical industry, because if in a place there is already chemical industry over decades, the people are not so they agree to live with chemicals, contaminations in the air, in the soil, and so on. Another place is if an investor of a chemical industries comes to a place without any chemical industry experiences, there's a lot of protest. So this is one example which I can describe, where in fact there's a lot of investment but only a very few number of jobs. So that's the jobless growth. So it could be that you have some selected places where there is an economic growth, but nevertheless, the shrinking process concerning the population is going on. I would not say that this is the alternative to demolition. The main reason, if I understand you right, the main reason of demolition is the huge amount of flats and the shrinking number, declining number of households. That's the problem. Nevertheless, we experience a huge growth of households, of small households. For example, in the city of Leipzig, which is not the capital, Leipzig has around 500,000 inhabitants, more than 50% are single households. This is an interesting tendency, especially in big cities, and Berlin much more than in other big cities. But not for second-order cities. But in Leipzig, too, we have 51% of households which are single households. So that means they are looking for appropriate apartments. So if the number of households is growing, then this could be a strategy against the vacancy. And then if there is no vacancy, of course, nobody would demolish. But another point in this context is that we are talking so much about these large housing estates. But if we look into the city on the older housing blocks from the so-called Gründerzeit, 100 years before, 150 years before, which are very well decorated and have a good image, everybody would say, coming from outside, wow, these are very interesting apartments. Why they are empty? There are much more empty apartments there than outside in these large housing estates. That's an interesting issue. Why? The same reason, there are not enough households who ask for that. And there are discussions of planners who think that they can encourage the people who live in these large housing estates, which are mostly located on the outskirts of the city, to move into the so-called very nice, well-decorated, old, big, inner apartments, Gründerzeit apartments. But it doesn't work in reality. And that's an interesting phenomenon.
You've mentioned suburbanization as a factor contributing to, deurbanization. And I don't know if it's, a translation thing. Are those blocks considered suburban areas? And if you are looking at suburbanization as a cause, does that mean do you redraw the boundary of what the urban region is that you're looking at?
Yeah, we should discuss this, what we understand with the term suburbanization.
You want to get it under our skin, right?
That funny book.
Shall I continue to answer? Or?
This is funny because this comes up in every talk we have about suburbs.
Uh-huh.
The question will always come by somebody will say, but these are not suburbs, so why do you call this suburbs? And how come we call these suburbs? So this is a core problem of the entire project. And so you're not the first one to have to answer this question. And Claire's not the first one. It's not the first time that Claire was in the room and the question was asked. So.
I think we should differentiate between different approaches. We have the project of we have this project on global suburbanism from your side, and you include these large estates located on the outskirts of the city within the project. Oh, this is your perspective. In fact, most of these estates are located at the edges of big cities because of the construction preconditions. You need much space to use the industrial technology for constructing these estates. And you have advantages concerning microclimate, concerning green in the surrounding, and so on. So I see a lot of advantages in this sense. But I would not say this is suburbanization. I'm not. In our thinking, our Leipzig thinking, suburbanization is the outmigration of people, mostly young families, in a wider fringe, and living there in the single households with a garden, mostly single households. We have the phenomenon, or we have we can observe the phenomenon after the reunification that there were investors coming from West Germany and invested in multi-story houses in villages, in urban villages outside of the city. I'm not sure if this is suburbanization too, but maybe it is suburbanization too. Yeah. But there, this is another interesting phenomenon. There we have the very, very strong vacancy tendencies, and there, these are the ruins of the next years, I'm convinced, in a very short time period. Over 30, 40 years.
Yeah, just maybe a comment on this. And we, in our project, which is different from how they have studied these areas, in our MCRI project on global suburbanization, we would call this suburbanization. And not what is happening there right now, but what happened between 1979 and 1989, we would have called that suburbanization, because it was clearly the production of less than central housing and the growth of ex-urban or suburban populations. Not in the sense that suburbs already mean something, like what Sigun just said, that for her suburbs mean single family houses out in the green. That is a valuation of what suburbanization means. For us, we treat everything as suburbanization regardless of what it looks like. Right, so that's one thing. The second thing I think is very important for our project, which I also think is important for the German discussion as much as the Canadian discussion, is that there have been historical forms of suburbanization that have produced what we now recognize as cities. But in those places, you often have suburban ways of life. So I give you an example. The old suburbs of Toronto, the post-war suburbs of Toronto, were created as suburban places, just as those places like Leipzig-Grünau. They were not built in the city. You also find high-rise buildings like this in the center of Dresden, for example, because Dresden was, as you know from Slaughterhouse-5, bombed completely to smithereens. So they rebuilt the city in much the same way. They actually built that form of housing in the middle of the city. But I wouldn't call that suburbanization. But what happened in Leipzig-Grünau or what happened in Jane and Finch, I would call that suburbanization. Now, this is all part of the city. But the way people live there is much different from the way people live at, let's say, College and Bathurst. People live differently in these places. They use different modes of communication, different modes of transportation. They work different kinds of jobs, and. So there's a difference in the urbanism or suburbanism scale of how people differentiate. What I find interesting, though, from a point of view of what we're getting into here in a conversation about comparative suburbanization, is that in Leipzig, for example, suburbanization of that kind is not incompatible with single-family households. While the majority of the people, I think, from what I know, and I don't have the numbers here right now, but I would think that if you look at the towers out here, that the majority of the people living in those towers live in family units of some sort.
There's very little single person occupancy in the towers. And I think that's a dramatic difference. It's a dramatic difference that has been observed in European cities since the 1970s, that most European cities now, regardless of which they are, where they are, now have a majority, or at least a large minority of single family, a single person families, single people living in units. And that is very different here. And I think that is when you go out and make a comparative examination of Grünau versus whatever we're looking at here, I think you will find significant differences in the way of life that people live. And just to point out how different that can be is that single person households can be the 80-year-olds, the 16.9% 80-year-olds, they're probably, many of them are single person households mm-hmm. living, but it's also young people. Mm-hmm. But then look at the way in which in Toronto, for example, advertising is done to young people. We're not seeing advertising for young people to live in the towers out here. You see advertising for young single people to live in the condominiums downtown. Right? So it's a completely different idea of who is supposed to live where. Right? But that is, I think, sociologically and geographically, this would be a great research question for us to look at when we were there, to see who actually lives there, and who do you see on the street, who can you talk to, and that you will find, I think you will find a significant difference in the social mix, in the way catering is done to these populations. What kind of bars are there on the street corner, if there are bars? What kind of health services will you find, if there are health services? And you'll find significant, I mean, there are hardly any hipster bars in the towers. Why is that? You know, it's because there's no population that lives there, which we would classically consider hipster. They live somewhere else. So there is this kind of thing, I guess, needs a lot more, in a comparative study, we need to create the categories by which we exist. There's one more thing I wanted to say on that issue of scale, which I find very interesting in the way you have developed the whole argument, is that I would argue against this is I don't have the numbers right here to prove it, but I know that the tendency is right, that in Canada 50% of all cities shrink, 50% grow. Our papers have shown this. So if you enlarge the scale of looking at shrinkage and growth to all of Canada, like all of Europe, you have similar kind of blue dots and red dots all over the city. So why is it that in this country we have absolutely no conception of this? We don't think about it. We don't talk about it. There is no national housing program to deal with shrinkage. There is no national program to deal with these huge convulsions that are happening in these northern communities, in these western communities, in these communities in Newfoundland and Labrador, in eastern Quebec. Right? We have no conception of that. There is no political... in this election, nobody talks about this. There's no political debate around these issues. Mm-hmm. So when we think about doing a comparison, let's think about scale as one aspect, which is very important. City scale, the regional scale, east and west, north and south, and then the whole country or the continent. And when you do that and compare it to also phases of suburbanization, bring in a historical scaling, you come to a much more complex understanding of how we can compare these things rather than saying, oh, this is not happening here. It is happening here. It's just a different relationship in terms of the spatial developments that we see here. So I just wanted to sort of, I learned a lot from just looking at that from that point of view. And I think this is something we could take up this afternoon, but also, of course, in our debates later on.
Sigon, you want to respond to what Roshi said?
Yeah, I totally agree. And the point is that to make a taboo on this entire issue doesn't help. So we have to discuss this, and we should not discuss it only in a negative sense or with a negative connotation. There are a lot of chances which we can use. And of course the idea is to come to a stabilization or to gaining back of population. So it is absolutely interesting what's going on maybe here too. But in Europe much more. And the point why we are talking or dealing with this issue is that the amount, the tempo, and the complexity of shrinking issues, that's new. So in the past, of course, we had shrinking cities by catastrophes or the gold rush in America. Then the people leave these cities and so on. Of course, everybody can give an example of this. No? But this intensive development of entire regions in a very high developed society, this is new. And this is so exciting, and for scientists, for social and for urban scientists, I think this is a great subject or topic to deal with that.
There were several hands up, so can I see the hands, because we have 8 minutes left. What I suggest is that we collect all these questions and comments one after the other, and then give some minutes to our visitor to respond. So I go in with the clock. So I think you were first.
My question is perhaps a little unrelated to your presentation directly, but I was wondering, as a researcher, what do you think drives the consciousness and the commitment to environmental research, particularly in Germany, from your perspective?
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Very interesting question. I like that.
Well, thank you. I have 2 points. One is I have been working around the world for all of my life, and I have seen so many problems, and I have seen the lack of your interdisciplinary and transdisciplinary working. It's very destructive. Like tsunamis, actually,
yeah.
Because and I would think that that you, with your work right now and your experience, could actually be a great help to communities around the world who have this problem, or who will be facing this problem within the next 10-20 years, especially in the coastal regions. This is one thing. Another thing is actually a personal experience about the origin of the need for reducing places. I was once in Egypt 50 years ago in a meeting between consultants from Eastern Europe, mm-hmm. Poland, mm-hmm. Who were coming to advise the Egyptian government how to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And one of their points, which they were very, very proud of it, was that coal in Poland was sold from the mine at the same price wherever it was in the Poland and whatever the cost of bringing up from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm sorry, but at least you must know what is the cost, even if you had offered it at the same price.
Yeah.
Because it can be ruinous for you in the future, mm-hmm. if you are selling it at the same price.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, no, it's not in our system, not in our system. And I said, okay, I would like to see you one day when your system will change your policy about the prices of coal. It lasted 7 years. Then it was in the newspapers all over the world, those which were concerned about these things, that now in Poland, from now on, the coal would be sold more or less based on the actual price, because they have put industries, big industries, in places where it was very, very costly to bring up the coal. And once they changed the price, of course, people disappeared.
Yeah, sure.
And you will have many, I suppose, from Eastern Europe, you have many parallel situations.
That's why we have contacts with Polish colleagues, and we will meet with Polish, the Canadian students will meet Polish students. Have this in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who was the next? Here, clockwise.
Yes, I wanted to ask, according to the map you showed, there are also shrinking regions with a high average of international migration or migrant population. So the question is, what is your argument? Considering international migration and shrinkage, because this ideologically influenced discussion that perhaps international migration will signify a counter tendency against shrinkage.
Total shrinkage, and it seems to be related to aging at the same time, because out migration usually happens with younger people and also with population. So how do you think that you can not only take the taboo away from shrinking, but also from aging in cities? And do you think that's possible?
Professor Desfort?
Yeah, I mean, it's just brought to my mind that you used the term pensionopolis.
He just retired from university. That's why we're smiling.
In some years, I'm too, so. Everybody of us.
I wonder if you could expand a little bit about what you had in mind for pensionopolis.
This was a term of the newspaper, not a scientific term.
Hassan obviously had to leave. I'm sorry that I didn't get his question. Or did he have a phone call, or he had to leave? Okay, so any other questions that I missed? Okay, so you want to answer to some of them in the last couple of minutes that we have? 1 minute?
I see 2 minutes on my clock.
Okay.
Yes, of course I will. Thank you very much for these interesting questions and for your interest in this issue, environmental issues you asked. Yeah. Of course, this entire process is connected with environmental issues. There is an energy issue, an energy problem. There is a problem of thermal isolation of these blocks, which could be a very good advantage of these blocks and for survival of these estates, because they have good preconditions. This is one environmental feature. Another environmental feature is this green space. We talked about this. No? Next point is the microclimate issue within these places, because they were planned in considering these main wind directions. So there is a good
circulation of air.
Yes. So and or other points are the traffic, public traffic, and individual traffic issues in this place which I investigated in Grünau. The origin planning was considered the public the public traffic and the entire district was well equipped with public transport, and the car traffic was concentrated on several lines, on specific streets. So that means that we have more or less a good situation within this district for pedestrians, and car traffic is concentrated on specific streets. So this is an advantage. It's an environmental issue. You mentioned the lack of interdisciplinarity and transdisciplinarity, especially in the tsunami region. I mentioned our projects which we are dealing with, and one of an important project is dealing with vulnerability. That means vulnerability to environmental hazards or climate change, like tsunami or drought or flood issues, which we experienced in Germany during the last year several times. And to deal with these issues is very important in that sense that we cannot be, or we cannot deal with this issue or be secure concerning these floods, for example, only by technical issues. We have to be much more prepared in dealing with these things, and to use knowledge from our parents and grandparents to know how they deal, for example, in creating land use plans, not to build close to the river everybody knows that living close to the river is a very attractive space for living. But if we have to deal with floods, so we have to have it in mind, in our mind, to use this technological knowledge, this natural science knowledge, and the social knowledge on the same level. So there's an intensive discussion at the moment in Germany too. And to be honest, it is not so easy to work together with natural scientists. It needs a lot of time. It needs a lot of openness, of common respect to deal.
But you can see your institute has done a real effort to contribute to solving questions in Bangladesh with the arsenic.
Yeah, arsenic. Yeah, you have realized it. Yeah, got the prize. Yeah, great.
And
you realized it.
If originally there had been such a multidisciplinary group in the people who spent billions in Bangladesh, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Arsenic in the groundwater, in the drinking water for the poor people, and we developed a technology, a very simple technology.
And a very ingenious solution.
Yeah. Okay, next point, international migrants, if this is a counter-tendency. In these regions which I described, I would say clearly no. Because international migration tendencies don't stop in these places. Because they don't find jobs, they go to prospering regions, to Munich or to Frankfurt and these places. Not in these shrinking regions. And the aging process, we have to deal with this, and we have to realize that aging is not a negative thing or a negative process, and we have to realize that a retired person is not an old person. A retired person can do so many things, and we are discussing in the demographic frame that we have the young retirees, rentners, and what is rentner?
Retirees.
The young retirees. The middle-aged retirees,
like
and the very very old retirees. So we divided it in three groups, and that means the important thing is the very old group, because they became much more ill or need much more services. Dementia, illness, and so on. I would look much more for the chances to include these persons in the community. So to act against, get much more babies. I'm becoming grandma next.
Yeah.
That's why I did my.
You did your fair share.
Yeah, I did what I could do.
Now we have to raise it to 2. Whatever, 2.2, not 1.4 as it is in Germany. Thank you. On this note, I want to thank again the speaker and also make a couple of announcements. Sigrun Kabisch brought 6 leaflets of her center. So for those of you, I'm not passing them around because it gives a disadvantage to people that sit over there. Mm-hmm. You will have to come and pick it up yourself if you're interested in this.
Only 5 because I took one.
Yep.
I didn't know there were only 6.
Share. You have to share with one another.
Yeah, but it's not a problem to be sad, because you can go on the website www.ufz.com.
Yes, so we can send this out.
And there you can find all this information.
And I also want to make a couple of announcements for future talks. There is Claire Major, who is going to be on the agenda of the next city talk on April 28th with her experience working in Fort McMurray, Alberta. And she has a really cool title. So you will receive the invitation for that talk. It's on April 28th, also here at the same over
12:30 it starts. Then on May the 4th, Melanie Puch will talk about cultural diversity and the global city of Toronto. This is sponsored by the Canadian Centre for German and European Studies, as well as the City Institute at York. For those of you who are taking this course with Doug, myself, and Will, and Sigrun this summer, we will reconvene here at 1:30. Try to be punctual, and then we can get